In fact, I don't know. Let's find out his progress. Vinny, where are you?
We're somewhere in Pennsylvania. So as you typically say, we head east. Usually, if it's east, it's also south, because I always find a way to get my myself into the state of Florida. But we are in Antrim Township, Pennsylvania, wherever that is.
I'm sure. Well, I don't know. I don't know. That's somewhere where they probably make candles and churn butter.
I bet they have a really happening downtown that we can find if we look really hard.
Well, if you stop in Hershey, get us some chocolate.
Okay.
Yes, sir. Before we get to the Vols game, I do want to tell you, man, you've seen a lot of college basketball in your time. Where did Michigan State, Kansas State rank for you, seeing that up close and personal? That was a hell of a college basketball game.
It was, and, yeah, I was very lucky to be there and to see it and feel the energy in the building, because – it was loud in there, and you had fans from both sides. It was really cool. I was talking to a buddy of mine, TJ Reeves, who you guys have had on to talk Bucks, Bucks sideline reporter, and we agreed it's one of the best non-Final Four NCAA tournament games we can remember ever seeing. That's kind of how good it was. I mean, he's a boxing guy. I'm a boxing guy. You covered the fight sports. You talked about it, Darren. It was one of those, I don't say heavyweight bouts, because some of the lighter weight classes can deliver the fireworks that those two were. But they were standing and training and just exchanging blows and then doing those hand signals back to me like, bring it. I'm right here. Let's go. And you're trading punches and going back and forth. It was that good. It was high level. I think whoever wins this game, they're going to be America's pick to go to the Final Four in the Elite Eight. They were both playing that well. I can't remember a game where two teams shot at a higher percentage, including from three. Like, I think Michigan State shot like 52% from three, and Kansas State like 46, and then from the floor, real high percentage. Just it was something else to watch those two teams that were really evenly matched.
Yeah, we talked a lot yesterday about the matchup for Tennessee and Florida Atlantic and how that game was going to play out. We talked a lot about how things had shifted for Rick Barnes, where no expectations going into the tournament because of how how they ended down the stretch because of the injury to Ziegler, and then poof, they win two games. They're in the Sweet 16. Now they're the favorite, according to the odds makers, to get to the Final Four because of all the action that had already happened. They became the favorites to get out of this pod, and you know how that was going to play in on Rick Barnes, you know, and just the tag, the legacy. Now they've got – it's shifted back to now pressure, right? Now people are saying they're supposed to win when that wasn't there. Overall thoughts on what transpired last night. A game in the first half, it looked like Tennessee was in control, but, boy, did it get away from them in the second half with that run by the Owls.
Yeah, and, Darren, you know, I was really cautious – I can't tell you how many people told me, boy, that bracket sure has opened up for Tennessee. I'm like, I mean, we've been down this road before. Loyola Chicago in 2018, there's other examples of Tennessee teams thinking that, you know, they have a more favorable matchup because of seeding, and then they end up losing. So it doesn't just happen to Tennessee. It's happened to others where it looks like the bracket opens up and it doesn't. So that was a little dangerous to begin with. And then as far as in the game, Tennessee missed opportunities in the first half to really put some distance between themselves and the Owls. They missed a lot of short-range shots that guys, when they make, this team is tough to beat. It provides them with energy on the defensive end. And Tennessee was missing those. And honestly, from when Olivier Gamwa missed his first short-range bunny, it rattled in and out, at that point, I was like, and I mean, I didn't predict him to just score six and then have to rally late. He get his first bucket, so I think 5:22 left of the game, something like that, which is just insanity. But when he is good from the jump, that's when he has his big games. And I had a worry or an unknown if he could duplicate what he did with his career-high 27-point performance against Duke. When those shots aren't falling early, sometimes it goes the other way. We've seen some 0-for-7s from the floor. I think he ended up 2-of-9 in the game with his baskets late. That was not a good early sign. And then other guys were missing short-range shots. Tyreek Key, let me tell you, Tyreek Key, Julian Phillips, those guys could not miss when we saw them at their practice the day before. And those guys were lights out. It didn't translate in the game. Same rim, same court, same backdrop, just a different story during the game, even if they were uncontested looks. So they missed an opportunity there. It gave Florida Atlantic juice, and they already had confidence. And then Tennessee's had these lulls, these offensive stretches where they don't score. And that was a big problem. They went the final 3:17 of the first half without a point. So Florida Atlantic wasn't shooting a good percentage. Tennessee was defending them, forcing them to use the shot clock, most of it. But then they're only down 5 points. They're, like, feeling great. That, hey, our shots are going to start to fall. We're going to keep putting pressure on them. We're going to get better looks, and this is going to turn around. That's exactly what happened. Tennessee, guys, do you know, from that start of the 3:17 stretch of not scoring in the first half to a Jonas Adoo jumper with, like, 6:10 left to go, 17 minutes and 7 seconds of game time, Tennessee scored 14 points. 17 minutes, they scored 14 points. You do the math to a 40-minute game, you're not beating anybody. And so that was one of the worst that I can remember seeing in terms of lack of offense. And then when Florida Atlantic took the lead, that was another level of red alert. With 1 point, much less when it got to 7, I felt like 17. Because when Tennessee's offense is struggling, they don't just flip a switch and then just go berserk. It's the next game or down the road where they can explode and get better. It usually doesn't happen within a game. So, yeah, the warning signs were there early from that game.
And Kamwa, coming off that huge game against Duke, could not duplicate it, you know, the next game. Just his struggle, he struggled as well. I mean, I know a lot of people struggle, but he struggled to make shots as well last night.
He did. The seniors, all the 5 seniors were a combined 15 of 40 from the floor yesterday. So that was really tough. I don't know how many of those guys are coming back. I suspect a couple will and a couple won't. Tyreek Key is the only one that doesn't have eligibility, so maybe they split it down the middle. We'll find out. None of those guys alluded to any decisions or anything in the postgame, although I kind of felt like Olivier might have been talking kind of past tense, but he didn't proclaim anything. So that might just be an educated guess on my part. But, yeah, that's the story. That's his story for this year. That's the story of the team, the up and down. And everyone declared or expected it to be that's the new Tennessee that beat Duke. And I felt like that'd be great if they have figured it out and moved forward, but they haven't done it yet. I got to see them string it together before I'm all in because of the track record. Even before Zakai Ziegler, this team was very inconsistent. So Olivier was a part of that. When he had his first 27-point performance against Texas, he followed up with 11 in the loss at Florida. And there's plenty of guys on this team that had a double-digit scoring game, and then went way down the next game. Just a lot of issues. I'll tell you this, though. All these guys are connected. The fact that Olivier can't get off offensively, that impacts the guards. Now the guards have it much more difficult, and they can't have space. That's why you see Vescovi shooting like Steph Curry, couple of those really long threes, and sometimes he makes them because he's a fantastic shooter, but that's the only way he's able to create space because they give him so much attention. And then when they are not a threat in the paint, then it makes it so much harder on those guys. And then the other thing is, and Greg Tolinski, assistant coach, told me this, did a one-on-one with him afterwards, and you can listen to that on our website and our central page at 991thesportsanimal.com. He was fantastic in breaking down the game and the season with me. He said that, you know, in the end, we really needed a dynamic, consistent driver to the basket. And he said Jemai Meshack did it some, but they just didn't do enough. And they ended up settling for perimeter shots in the second half. And they just weren't a threat either in post points or driving and breaking the defense down. That's exactly what Florida Atlantic did to Tennessee. In the first half, they really couldn't get to the basket that much. In the second half, they did. So now Tennessee, their defense is breaking down to the drive. Then they're kicking. Then Tennessee is leaping towards three-point shooters. Now suddenly they have two guys out of position, move the ball, two passes, and you're getting wide open threes. And then they started making them. So the drive is something that can benefit you so much. They need a bigger guard that can get all the way to the rim and finish. And that's something they're going to have to address in recruiting because, yes, the guys think they're going to help them a little bit, but they need someone that can create and score over size. And they just don't have that on the roster that has the freedom to do it at least.
Vince, you talked about the fact that you said you need to see them do it to really believe it at some point because they keep getting stuck at certain parts. And I understand what you're saying, but Vince, I'm going to be a little rough here with Tennessee. They've never done it ever. So, I mean, this is not just a Rick Barnes thing. They've never done this, which is, I'm almost finding hard to believe that they have never been able to win a national championship on any level in men's basketball since 1908. And that's where we really are here. So I don't even know how to think about that because I normally think of things in a football aspect where, you know, well, the first one since 1950, the first one since 1998, those kinds of things. But when you haven't done it ever at all, I'm not even sure where to go with that. Where is this team historically as a program now?
Well, their deepest run in the NCAA tournament was with Bruce Pearl, and that was to the Elite Eight.
2010, yes, sir.
And correct. So they haven't even gotten to the Final Four,
no.
Much less a national championship. And there have been disappointments. And you're right, it's not just the Rick Barnes era. There were some during Bruce Pearl, but Bruce Pearl also had the peak season, which is the bar. And that's why I think for Barnes' legacy, in order to truly get people off of his back, he needed to get beyond where Bruce Pearl got and get to the Final Four. Right now, Rick Barnes, in his coaching career, I know this is more than just Tennessee, as you asked, Justin, but
yeah,
he's now 27-27 in 27 seasons of the NCAA tournament. So, you know, it is what it is, but Tennessee's had their struggles as well.
Vince, Tennessee is 25-26 in the NCAA tournament. 25-26. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So I don't have an answer, Justin, as to why that is, but it should. To me, it's about talent, and Tennessee just had their flaws show up for this year's team. It's not bracket opening up or anything like that. It's you got to have right players, and then you got to react the right way. Rick Barnes said he thought that some guys that they weren't as locked in as they needed to be, or they expected them to be in, you know, arguably the biggest game of their lives. So that was, and you look at it, it's probably some players that didn't get a lot of minutes in the game. So, you know, there's a lot of factors probably for all those situations.
Yeah. FAU played extremely loose as well. Like as the game goes on, you can almost feel the confidence surging in them. They were taking shots very loosely. I mean, you could tell they were playing with house money almost all night.
Yes, they were confident from the beginning. And then once they were still in the game at halftime and then went on that run. It wasn't even the whole run. It was the start of the run. They were feeling it, and it definitely looked good at that time for them.
Vince, I know you got to go. Is real quick, do you think it's fair criticism for people that are saying Rick Barnes should have called a timeout and tried to slow things down and regroup and reset?
It's not really something he typically does.
Okay.
And Tennessee's had a lot of those runs this year. So, yeah, perhaps. But that's kind of consistent with the way he's done it previously, is he lets them go, but then things break down on both ends. They don't score, and they break down defensively. So, yeah, maybe you could. I think it's fair to ask on that, but it's the way he has done it before.
Yeah, fair enough. Hey, appreciate it as always. I know you're coming back. Safe travels. I know you got to jump on the Sports Animal. We'll yes. talk on Monday, man.
Thanks,
appreciate
Vince.
It.
All right, sounds good. Have a good weekend. Be safe out there with that weather.
You do the same. Vince Ferrara, 99.1, the Sports Animal there in Knoxville. Come